You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass Politics. I'm Ben Mathis. Before I start the show, I want to make two quick announcements. Over the next few weeks, I'm going to be doing a listener survey to get a better idea of who's listening out there. No matter how long you've been a listener or how frequently you listen to the show, I'd like to get to know you better and to get a better idea of what you want. So it'll be an enormous help to me if you'll fill out a short questionnaire at kickasspolitics.com, or you can click on the survey link in the show notes to this episode. It'll only take 60 seconds, and you can even fill out the survey anonymously if you want. It's just a few quick questions, and it'll help me better tailor content and advertising for you, the listeners. And the other way you can help out in a very big way is by donating to our fundraising campaign at gofundme.com/kickasspolitics, or click on the donate button on our webpage. I'm ramping up to two shows a week now, and I've set an ambitious goal of funding all of our production costs for the coming year by the end of this month. It's a chance for you to participate in what I'm creating here, and there'll be some cool rewards for donating and chances for you to interact with me and the show. Plus, you'll get a thank you shout out on the podcast. So if you want to have amazingly good karma like Stan Kerr, Brent Smith, Ken Molan, and Karen Vanek, then help me reach our goal by the end of the month and click on the donate link at kickasspolitics.com or go to gofundme.com/kickasspolitics. That's enough begging for now. Enjoy the show.
And my first vote was for Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan, a great president.
Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan.
Are we going to take the Reagan approach?
Running on the Reagan program.
Ronald Reagan believed in America.
Well, think if Reagan had said that during the Cold War.
That was from the second Republican presidential debate at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library a couple weeks ago. For three long, grueling hours standing in front of the Air Force One plane that Reagan had used as president, 15 conservatives climbed on top of each other in an almost embarrassing competition to be the candidate who loves Reagan the most, the candidate who's the best keeper of the Reagan legacy, the candidate who'll govern most like Reagan, or who likes jelly beans the most. Governor John Kasich of Ohio humble bragged that when he was a congressman, he was pretty sure that he had traveled with Reagan on that very same Air Force One behind the stage. Rand Paul told a sentimental story about how when he was just a little boy, his father took him to meet Ronald Reagan. And Marco Rubio told a story about how his Cuban immigrant grandfather revered Ronald Reagan. Jeb Bush and Scott Walker tied for the most mentions of Ronald Reagan with 5 each. Of course, we saw how well that worked out for Walker. The only person on the stage who didn't name drop Ronald Reagan was Donald Trump. But hey, Trump only name drops Trump. Well, one well-known conservative who was in the room that night says candidates need to stop asking what would Ronnie do and be their own man. He also says if Republicans want to win a 21st century election, they need to start looking toward the future instead of dwelling in the 80s. And here's the kicker, folks. The guy who's saying all of this is Ronald Reagan's son, Michael Reagan. He's a best-selling author, and for 26 years, he hosted a nationally syndicated conservative talk radio show. Today, he spends much of his time speaking and writing about conservative issues, and he's also founder and president of the Reagan Legacy Foundation, which, according to their website, seeks to advance the causes President Reagan held dear and memorialized the accomplishments of his presidency. But as he'll tell me in today's podcast, there's a big difference between memorializing Ronald Reagan and mimicking Ronald Reagan. Coming up in just a moment.
To Washington, it's time for Kick-Ass Politics. And now here's your host, Ben Mathis.
Today I'm joined by conservative author, radio host, and speaker Michael Reagan, who also happens to be the son of Ronald Reagan, and he's the president of the Reagan Legacy Foundation. Michael, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hey, it's great to be with you, but I also tell everybody I have a mother also.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. You know, when I was growing up, I was Jane Wyman's son because she was the big heavy hitter out of Hollywood. Yeah. Academy Award winner, Golden Globe winner, owned television series in the 50s and what have you. So I was Jane Wyman's kid. And my dad gave that speech for Barry Goldwater in October of 1964. And I went from being Jane Wyman's son to being Ronald Reagan's son. And so for my whole life, I'm trying to figure out who the heck I am.
2 weeks ago, the Republican debate was held at your father's presidential library. Before we get into it here, I just want to ask, was it as exhausting for you as it was for me? I mean, it was as long as the Academy Awards.
The last hour was just brutal. And the last two questions were just stupid. But you know what it was? CNN was trying to fill time to sell the commercials. And they asked the dumbest questions on the planet. My wife and I and my daughter Ashley, who was there, my son couldn't be there, but we started looking at each other because, you know, I had a code name, my daughter had a code name, and we're thinking to ourselves, it's the Secret Service that chooses your code name. You don't get to choose your code name. That's all in their program. I said, but it's just a really stupid question to ask. It was just like, why are you doing these things? They should have shut the debate off. You know, let us look at reruns of something for the next 30 minutes.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I felt that some of those questions were straight out of the Miss America pageant.
Oh, you know something else? I mean, I sat there during the debate thinking to myself, is Hugh Hewitt really here?
Yeah, that's funny. Wasn't he even at a separate desk from the rest of the moderators? It was like the children's table.
Yeah, Jay. But then you had, you know, Dana, and you had Hugh at a separate desk across kind of the stage from them. And I said at one point to my wife and Ashley, I said, are they ever going to ask you to ask a question or Dana ask a question? And they would come to him for one question. It would go back to Jake and, you know, it seemed like 4 days later they get to ask another question. I mean, if I'm Hugh Hewitt, like, what was the point?
Yeah, that was odd. Well, the 15 candidates on the stage stood up there trying to basically out-Reagan each other, comparing themselves to your father, and at least one candidate who probably thought Reagan should have felt honored to be compared to him. As you watched all this, did you think it was an honor to have all these candidates fawning over your dad, or was there something a little bit, I don't know, sycophantic about it all?
Well, that's been going on for a long time, but I've kind of gotten used to these people trying to equate themselves with my father. And you know, I don't remember my father when he was running for president saying, you know, gosh, me and Abe Lincoln, me and George Washington, me and Jefferson, boy, we just hang together. The only thing my father ever said about those three is when they would talk to my dad about his age, he used to say, oh, yeah, you know, Thomas and George and Abe and I used to play in the sandbox together.
Oh, right. That joke.
So that was kind of his answer. But trying to equate themselves, you know, with my father, they've got to remember, most people voting today, or a large percentage of people voting today, have no idea who Ronald Reagan was. They knew he was president of the United States of America, but that's where it ends.
There was an article that you were interviewed in the day of the debate that went up on Politico about just this subject. And in it, actually, your brother, Ron Reagan, made an interesting point when he said Ronald Reagan didn't go around comparing himself to Eisenhower, as you just said. And he said it's odd that these people are so eager to pretend to be another person, and it suggests that they aren't fully developed themselves. Is he right about that?
Yeah, it's really the only time my brother and I have ever agreed on anything. I mean, we don't agree on anything known to mankind, but on that one, because the Politico article did an interview with me and also with Ron. And I think Ron's right, and I think I'm right. I think they do themselves a disservice, because if they try to compare themselves to Ronald Reagan, somebody who's iconic, the reality of it is they lose because they're nothing like Ronald Reagan. I think what we're looking for is we're looking for somebody who wants to lead, and you can't lead through another person's eyes. You've got to lead through your own thoughts, your own ideas, where you want to take America. Be a cheerleader like Ronald Reagan, you know, was for America. But what are you going to do? What when I wake up in the morning, why am I going to feel good about you? And they're not doing that.
Well, yeah. And in that same article on Politico, you said, it's interesting to see how many of them recreate my father in their image and likeness instead of his.
Mm-hmm.
That must drive you crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it really does. It happens all over, whether it's candidates, you know, running for office, or people in radio business, or in the political world. I just sit back in amazement. I keep on thinking to myself, I never saw them at Thanksgiving dinner. I never saw them at the house having a cocktail. I never saw these people, but they seem to know more about my father than I do. And I find out when I Skype at my at Reagan World, what comes back at me sometimes is from people that have no concept who Ronald Reagan was. And they think they know more than I would know about him. And it's amazing to sit there and watch all of this, in fact, go down. And it gets mind-numbing sometimes.
Well, yeah, and I guess that's the great tragedy about no longer being on this earth, is as soon as you're gone, people start rewriting your legacy, and you have no control over it. All of the candidates at the debate reference your father, and they try to draw these comparisons. But in reality, they differ very widely from your dad on policy issues. Is it a matter of they're getting him wrong, or is it willful ignorance, revisionism? What's going on here?
Well, revisionism happens so much, and every 4 years when we have election, there's revisionism. I mean, any conservative out there that actually believes Ronald Reagan would surround the United States and collect 11 million human beings and toss them out of the United States of America is really smoking crack. I mean, just smoking crack. Ronald Reagan would never, ever, ever do that. That wasn't the heart of Ronald Reagan. A friend of mine writes parody songs, and I sent him a parody song idea the other day, and the parody song was named "Where Have All the Gardeners Gone? Long Time Passing." I mean, some of the stuff we're getting behind is just absolutely, you know, really outrageous. So I think they get my dad completely wrong on immigration. Completely 100% wrong there.
Well, I do think it surprised a lot of people how big a role immigration has played in this primary. But Michael, give me your post-debate analysis. Were there any candidates on the stage who really impressed you?
My daughter is 32. I said, what'd she think of the debate? And she thought the same thing I did, that Christie and Carly and Marco Rubio won the debate and Trump lost the debate.
Yeah.
Now, let me show you how thin-skinned some of our fellow conservatives are out there. I say that on my Twitter account. And you know what I get back?
Uh-oh.
How do you see Chris Christie as your first choice? I thought to myself,
I thought you were going to tell me you got an angry tweet from Donald Trump. Because, you know, if someone at Quiznos gets his order wrong, he goes on Twitter and attacks them.
And you're sitting there going, wait a minute. But, you know, my daughter said, she said, out of everybody in the debate, she says, the one person I know where he stands on every single issue is Chris Christie. Now, she said, you can agree or disagree with him, but the reality is I know where he stands on every issue. All these other people dance around the maypole on so many of these issues. So I like Chris Christie. I like the governors that are out there. I think that Kasich is a good governor. Christie's a good governor. Jeb's a good governor. There's some good governors out there. I ask me to see how this all, in fact, plays out. But as I've said about Donald Trump, I said, if I were to write a theme song for Donald Trump in this campaign, it would be from the movie, The Music Man, 76 trombones. And that's who he reminds me of. Google 76 trombones and watch it play out. And it just is Donald Trump marching down the street and everybody's following him in awe. And you're saying, what does this guy bring to the table?
He promises a lot. Speaking of Trump, then, Ann Coulter keeps saying on Twitter that Donald Trump is the new Ronald Reagan. Now, this
She's
is
nuts.
This is the same Donald Trump who, in the Art of the Deal, said Reagan is a con man who doesn't deliver. I'm guessing you're not comfortable with that comparison.
No, I think Ann Coulter is absolutely nuts to think that, you know, again, I never saw Ann Coulter at dinner either. Why is Ann Coulter looking for Ronald Reagan and people?
Yeah.
Well, see, I don't even believe she ever met Ronald Reagan. If she did, she was a child. I mean, remember, this is the woman who loved Chris Christie and then didn't love Chris Christie and loved Mitt Romney, didn't love Mitt Romney. I mean, she changes horses like I change underwear.
Well, there are a number of people who are trying to draw comparisons between your father and Donald Trump. Are there some similarities, maybe in their background, coming from show business, life in the public eye, or are these comparisons just completely way off base?
No, Ronald Reagan, my father would be just appalled the way Donald Trump is treating other people on the dais, if you will, and the personal attacks. I talked to Donald Trump for 20 minutes the day before the debates. He called me on his way to his airplane. He was flying to Dallas to do that event before he came out here to California. And I talked to him, and I said, Donald, you can't blow the building up on the way through it and expect to put the building back together to help you get elected president of the United States. He said, well, you know, I don't attack anybody unless they attack me first. I said, Donald, they attack you on substantive issues. You're attacking everybody personally. And it's hard to walk back these personal attacks. You just can't do that. And that was kind of the end of the conversation. We talked about a few other little things for about 20 minutes and hung up. And, of course, what's the first thing he did in the debate? He goes after Rand Paul. What's that guy doing here?
Yeah, and you're right. He does take substantive issues and make it personal. Just this last week, after Rubio said that to be president, you need to have at least a basic knowledge of foreign policy issues, Trump went crazy and went on, you know, started going off on him and saying he's sweaty and he's a kid and he's balding and all this crazy stuff.
It was basically very hot up there. I mean, the lights were very warm.
Yeah, at the debate.
He wasn't the only one sweating up there. Maybe Donald doesn't sweat.
Yeah.
And you don't sweat when you really have nothing to add, really. And he really didn't. I mean, I would have kicked him out of the first debate when he said he wouldn't support the nominee of the party.
Yeah, that was a shocker.
I would have said goodbye.
Well, you know, Reagan switched parties at one point. Do you think he ever would have considered running as an independent if he didn't get the nomination?
No. And he, by the way, my father was asked.
I was
literally, when he lost, and I've never told this story before. Maybe I told it once.
I've never heard
that. The day after he lost the nomination, the following morning, I was walking down, I think, to thank the California delegation.
Is this, which year was this?
It's 76.
Okay.
76, to thank the California delegation. And my dad was coming out of a room, had a pair of tan slacks on and a white sport coat. And I forget what color shirt it is, but that's the best I can do for you. And, oh, he said, good morning. I said, good morning, Dad. And I said, where have you been? He said, I've been in the media. I said, what's the meeting? He said, oh, there's some people in there who want to support me to run as an independent.
Really?
Against Gerald Ford and, of course, Jimmy Carter for the presidency. I said, what'd you tell him? He said, I told him no. I didn't win the nomination. I'm not going to sit there and run against a sitting president. I did that, tried it, lost, over.
Wow.
That's the first time I've ever told anybody, by the way.
Yeah,
just to
I never
know.
Even, yeah, that's amazing. I've never heard
that
in my life.
I forgot that story.
That's incredible.
Yeah, I tell people, I said, I don't know what I know until somebody asks me the right question, hits the right circuit in my head. And I go, oh yeah, I remember that. He walked out, we ran each other in the hallway and
I never knew that. And that was a big deal that he had nearly defeated an incumbent president for his party's nomination. I have to think that the offer of an independent run could have probably been pretty tempting, considering that Reagan only lost the nomination by 4 states. He had a huge fundraising base and a lot of supporters who probably would have followed him.
Yeah, but he wouldn't have won a general election. He would have basically handed it to the Democrats. He went out and he worked for Gerald Ford. I worked for Gerald Ford. My sister Maureen worked for Gerald Ford. I think Maureen and I did an event here in Beverly Hills. And then we went out and did a couple of events on the road for him. My dad went out and gave a couple of speeches for him. But then who did Gerald Ford blame for losing? He still blamed Ronald Reagan. I mean, Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter had one thing in common. They both blamed Ronald Reagan for losing.
Well, Michael, I'm so glad that you shared that story about Reagan's very brief flirtation with an independent run. I have never heard that story before, and I'm not sure that many people have heard that story. But I guess those were the days when good sportsmanship still counted for something. Ronald Reagan didn't need the chairman of the Republican National Committee to make him sign a pledge just to do the right thing. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then when I come back, Michael Reagan will share some more stories about his dad, his thoughts on expanding the Republican Party, and what the Gipper might think about politics in the age of social media. Back with more after this message. This portion of the podcast is brought to you by Audible. Audible has over 180,000 audiobooks available to download for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And right now, Kick-Ass Politics listeners can get a free audiobook download and a free 30-day trial. Just go to audibletrial.com/kickasspolitics or click on the sponsor link on our webpage at kickasspolitics.com and go get your free audiobook. And if you like Kick-Ass Politics and want to help keep us on the air, then please support the show by making a donation to our GoFundMe campaign at GoFundMe.com/kickasspolitics. Or go to the show website and click on the donate link. Your support will help keep us producing new and interesting programs in the future. That's GoFundMe.com/kickasspolitics. And now, back to the show. We're back, and I'm talking with conservative author, speaker, and radio host Michael Reagan. Michael, in the first half, we were talking about how many in the most conservative wing of the Republican Party have become obsessed with their own conservative purity tests and primarying any candidate who doesn't match up 100% with their values. And we also talked about how many conservatives kind of have a selective memory when it comes to your father, Ronald Reagan, on a number of the issues. All of which begs the question, would Ronald Reagan be able to win in today's Republican Party?
I mean, all this stuff that goes out about rhinos, he's a rhino, she's a rhino, we're all rhinos. I mean, and you sit there and go, my God, I said, Ronald Reagan never referred to somebody as a rhino. And Ronald Reagan, in today's world that we live in, if we're just looking at Ronald Reagan as governor of the state of California, and you look at the record as governor of California, which is a great record of what he did, what would some people on talk radio say about someone who had raised taxes as governor, signed an abortion bill as governor, signed no-fault divorce as governor, and was, in fact, prior to being governor, the man was a union leader, and the union was the Screen Actors Guild. I mean, can you imagine what some people in the radio business or television business would be saying about that person today? And that's what's really kind of sad, that, you know, Ronald Reagan looked at the whole of the person, and he really believed in the 80-20 rule. It seems today we believe more in the 100% rule. If you're not with me 100% of the time, I'm with you none of the time. And that's just stupid.
Well, yeah, he was actually willing to sit down to the negotiating table with a guy like Tip O'Neill and make things work. But, you know, I often think many of these guys in Congress today, it seems the only tool that they have in their tool belt is just to pack up their marbles and go home. And that's not a strategy.
Yeah, but it's like, you give me everything I want or I'm going to close down government. On my op-ed piece that I wrote this week, and it's coming out, deals with the whole thing of Planned Parenthood. I agree with them with Planned Parenthood. You know, it's a terrible organization. What they've done, the videos are terrible. It gives us a lot of things to talk about if we're in, you know, the conservative media, if you will. But is this a hill you want to die on? Is this a hill you want to fall on the old sword on? And you got to go, no, you can't. It may be great for your followers, but the only people talking about this issue is conservative radio, whether it's internet, Sirius, you know, or in the, you know, on the big station syndicated across the country, or it's Fox News. And there's 16 million people, hardcore conservatives, that are in the system. It's about 16 million. Well, 300 million people live here. Where's everybody else getting their news? ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, all these other things. And they're not talking about it. And so, you know, your group may be happy that you're talking about it. They may say, yeah, close down the government. But at the end of the day, Barack Obama doesn't get blamed for the closing down the government. The Congress always gets blamed, no matter if Ronald Reagan's the president or Obama's the president. The Congress of the United States always gets the blame. And what you want to do is shut down the government during holiday season? I really think that's kind of stupid.
It's like the Republican Party is suffering from ADD right now because we're so easily distracted by these smaller things like Benghazi or even immigration. It's like no one sits at home thinking about immigration every day. And then suddenly it becomes a huge issue.
I mean, people think about jobs. They do think about immigration. But what Ronald Reagan did was this. Ronald Reagan had a large canvas, and he showed us a big picture of what he wanted to accomplish. And he never let anything stop him on the way to painting that canvas. Today, what we do is we argue about little tiny stuff, but we don't have a big picture. Yeah. Ronald Reagan said what? I want to bring down the Berlin Wall. I want to lower taxes and end the Cold War. Boom. Three things he wanted to do. He didn't want to do 100. He didn't want to do 1,000. He didn't have a 59-point plan. Buy my book and read it when most people don't read today. He said, I want to do three things. That's what I want to do.
A while back, I did an episode with Dr. Stephen Hayward, who's written a couple of books on your dad. And we did an episode on Reagan's A Time for Choosing speech. And in that speech, he didn't mince words. You know, that wasn't mourning in America back then. He was fired up and essentially saying America was going to hell in a handbasket if we didn't change course. What's the difference between the anger and the disillusionment that he was tapping into back then and the anger that Trump is trying to tap into today?
You know, back then we had ABC, NBC, CBS. So we had the big three. Yeah, everybody else. There was nobody else in the building. Talk radio had just really begun on KABC here in Los Angeles. So really, you didn't have the churning of the anger. You know, everybody since talk radio got into it and now cable into it, internet into it, Sirius into it, everybody's trying to become their own National Enquirer. National Enquirer, number one selling newspaper in the world. Why? It tells you bad news, doesn't tell you good news. It tells you all the bad news. And I think today, in the world that we live in, things that happen are just exacerbated by that medium. And so you have, you know, a place where conservatives can go and others can go. Liberals can go to MSNBC, conservatives go to Fox News or talk radio or wherever it might be. And they get all their things that they've been thinking all churned up and basically verified. Hey, there's somebody else that thinks like me. And Trump taps into that. I think Trump must, if there was going to be another party, political party, I would refer to it as the talk radio party.
Yeah.
And Trump would be their first nominee.
And this is interesting because you're saying this as someone who was a talk radio host for, 15, 20 years or so?
26 years.
26 years, yeah. Yeah.
26 years, but it is. You tap into it's about making phones ring. That's what it's about. It's about, you know, bringing listeners to. And it's not that I don't believe much of the same stuff. I do. But I look at it from a different, you know, I'm trying to look at how do we get elected? How do we win the presidency? So I'm almost looking at it like the same way I did when I was consulting my father when he was running for president. You know, I'm the guy who fired Roger Stone, Paul Manafort, Charlie Black, and John Sears on the morning of New Hampshire primary in 1980. I'm the guy Ronald Reagan called to approve the press release firing his complete campaign staff on that morning. My sister and I were both kind of, you know, consultants to dad. Not that we're hired that way, because we weren't, but my father knew that he could talk to Maureen and I, or we could call him on the phone and give him input. My sister's the one responsible for Sandra Day O'Connor being named to the Supreme Court, not by name only, by name, but the fact it was my sister who actually cut a deal with her father to come off the campaign trail for the Equal Rights Amendment back in 1980. The staff had asked her to come off that because Equal Rights Amendment and Republican women like oil and water. And they asked what it would take to get Maureen to stop campaigning for the Equal Rights Amendment. And she said, very simply, if you can get your candidate to guarantee me his first appointment to the Supreme Court will be a woman, I'll stop campaigning for the Equal Rights Amendment today. And as soon as she got that out of her mouth, their candidate, her father, sitting in the room, said deal. And her and my sister and my father shook hands. That deal was made. My sister never campaigned for the Equal Rights Amendment during the whole campaign of 1980. My dad's elected. First appointment to the Supreme Court, Sandra Day O'Connor.
Yeah, he grew the party, and he was a big tent Republican who put effort into reaching out to women and minorities and young voters. Are conservatives no longer in the business of actually trying to win elections? Are we becoming a very, very small tent?
No, conservatives need a leader or an enemy. Liberals are led by ideology. Conservatives need a leader or an enemy. They need someone they can coalesce behind. So if you have a leader, like a Ronald Reagan, for example, that you can coalesce behind, that's great. If you don't, you need an enemy. Right now, the enemy is immigration. A year or so ago, I was speaking at an event in West Palm Beach, Florida. I said to myself, when my father was president, this party was much more inclusive than it is today. It's become very exclusive. I then invited all the blacks and Hispanics in the room, would you please now rise? And everybody looked at each other. And I said, you notice the only blacks and Hispanics in this room are standing, serving you breakfast?
Oh, wow.
Have you ever thought about having them at the breakfast table? And I went back, I spoke last year, nothing's changed. Nothing's changed. There's at least two things, maybe three, that the Republican Party have trouble accepting. One is blacks, two are Hispanics, and three are smartphones.
Yeah.
I mean, go to a Republican event and it's just they look at a smartphone like Dracula looks like at a cross that's about ready to be planted on his forehead. It's really kind of interesting to sit back and watch. I mean, you go to Republican events, you have to explain to them a hashtag. I ask people, do you tweet? No, I'd never tweet. I said, well, you know, Barack Obama had 40 million Twitter and Facebook followers in the last election. Mitt Romney had 1.4 million. The thing Ronald Reagan did is the fact he had people around him who were genius at communicating to.
Yeah.
Let me take you back to the library. I had somebody ask me the day before the debate, said, what do you think your father would think of having Air Force One there in the background with people who may fly on it someday? Wouldn't he be offended by that? I said, no, he'd look at it and say, what great staging, because that's exactly what you got to admit.
Yeah.
The visual was unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
Michael Deaver would stage events. Ronald Reagan would come in and close the deal. I will tell you, the only person, this is another reason he's on top, the only person who knows how to stage an event is who?
Yeah. Yeah. We don't even need to say it.
His TV experience.
Yeah.
He's been in the media. And so he stages an event, and then he comes in and closes the deal. None of these other guys know how to stage an event. I mean, there's a video out now. I love John Kasich. I've known John Kasich for a long time. And he's trying to, you know, raise money here in this last third, you know, quarter of the year. But to have a video on of him just looking like an idiot dancing is just so stupid. Yeah. Michael Deaver would never put Ronald Reagan in that position. You don't show your candidate looking like an idiot.
Yeah, Reagan was always very careful to always look presidential and never to expose himself too much and become, you know, because now in this Twitter age and this age of social media and reality TV, I feel like so many of these candidates feel this pressure for the voters to have to know them on some intimate level.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, how you walk into a room. Do you own the room? And when you leave, do you own the room? And the only person in this campaign at this point that really owns the room when they walk in is Donald Trump. I would say probably the other person who owns the room, at least owns half the room when he walks in, is probably like a Marco Rubio.
Yeah.
It's about owning the room.
Yeah.
And if you don't own the room, you're not going to go anywhere.
Are there any of these guys that you see a little bit of your dad in?
I don't look at it that way. I do not look at people and say, are they close to Reagan? Otherwise, they have them take me home. Adopt me. I'm available. I mean, I just don't. I mean, you have Rick Perry, Rick Perry is probably as close as anybody. He's a cowboy. You know, buys his cowboy boots the same place my dad had cowboy boots, wears the same size Stetson hat as my dad wore. I mean, that's as close as Rick Perry is going to get. But that doesn't make you, you know, Rick Perry can't communicate. He gets up on stage, turn the red light on, and he just doesn't communicate. I'm willing to help every one of these candidates. They want to talk to me. And the only one who used to talk to me a little bit was like, oh, quite a bit was like a Rick Perry and what have you. But what happens to me, I get caught up in the fact of, you're Ronald Reagan's son. What else do you do? I'd like, what else do you, you're Ronald Reagan's kid. What else do you do? And my joke is, I said, I'm the guy that walks into a bank, robs the bank, shoot and kills six tellers. I walk out of the bank and the police officer there is there to arrest me. And he sees me. He says, oh my God, your father was the greatest president this country ever had. My wife is not going to believe who I'm arresting today. Can I get a selfie?
Yeah.
And I'd be going, no, I just killed six people in the bank.
Yeah, that's a great get-out-of-jail-free card.
I got to send this picture to my wife and to my father. My father voted for your dad four times. He's not going to believe I'm arresting you.
Well, yeah, I have to ask you, and I'm the biggest hypocrite in the world for even bringing this up now after we've been talking, and I've probably said this a dozen times. Do you ever get tired of people asking you, what would your father think about this?
You know what you do? You just finally just accept it. I guess I can tell you. I mean, I emailed Jeb the other day because I've known Jeb longer than anybody in the building.
Oh, well, yeah. Funny. Yeah. The Reagan-Bush connection.
And I emailed Jeb and I said, Jeb, listen, I said, you and I have a lot in common. But one of the things we do have in common is the fact that we both are sons of former presidents of the United States. We're from a very small minority. When you think my dad was number 40, your dad was number 41, your brother number 43. So think about it. You start the presidencies back in the 1700s. So from 1700s to 2016, there's only been 44 first families. I mean, that's a small group of people.
You guys need to have a barbecue every summer or something.
I agree with you. I have to try and do that. And I said, you know, what you seem to be doing is trying to run away from who your family is.
Yeah.
I said, you know something? I tried to run away for a long time. And it's not going to happen. You got to learn to embrace it. Embrace the heroics and the hero that your father is. The biggest applause you got at the debate at my dad's library is when you said, my brother kept this place safe for 7 years.
Yeah, they
I
went
said,
crazy
you need to embrace
that.
Who they are. And I said, I think if you embrace them in that way, you'll be more comfortable in choosing your words when you're out on the campaign trail. I think you're trying so much to differentiate yourself from them. You've bought into the liberal gobbledygook that they're bad people. They're wonderful people.
Well, I think the takeaway that you're giving us here for candidates is to be your own man and stop trying to fill someone else's shoes. Because if you try to do that, you're only going to disappoint.
I mean, it is. As I said, I could rob a bank. I'm still Ronald Reagan's son. That's the way it is. And you can either run away with it, run away from it, or you can say, you know something? Yeah, I'm Ronald Reagan's son. I'm pretty lucky that, they adopted me into the family after I was 3 days old. And here I am. And like I tell people when I go speak, hey, if the Reagans don't adopt, they don't have a conservative child.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that must be an interesting Thanksgiving dinner.
Well, it used to be.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Well, Ronald Reagan was a man who had a vision and always said our best days were ahead. Rather than copying Ronald Reagan, are there some things that Republicans would do well to study about articulating a forward-looking strategy?
You really have to be a visionary. How do you see America? How do you see? We have a president who wakes up every morning and blames America for something. I mean, he negotiates from a position of America's wrong. What can we do to right the ship? Ronald Reagan woke up every morning where America is right. and God put her here for a purpose, and negotiated from that position. And so, you know, I want to know from the from these candidates, when you wake up in the morning, how do you see America? Forget how you see yourself. I don't care how you see yourself. But how do you see America first? Yeah. How do you see America? And now, as president, how are you going to get us there? How are you going to do it? When you ask Ronald Reagan the question, he would tell you.
Really? He would actually give you a plan? I mean, he wouldn't just pull a Donald and say, when I'm president, it's going to be amazing and we'll be winning all the time. Just take my word for it and don't ask any questions.
Yeah, okay, we're going to win so much you're going to get bored with winning. But how do you see America in the world? And how are you going to take America really in the 21st century and make her, and if you really want to take something from my dad, that shining city on a hill, how are you going to get there? What are you going to do? How are you going to cheerlead for America and really get it done?
Yeah.
And we don't have people really doing that. We haven't fallen back, well, I did this and I did that and I did this and I did that. Okay. But, you know, with Ronald Reagan, he never talked about I did this and I did that and I did this and I did that. He looked at America, saw greatness, and said, you know, how do I make us greater? How do I make the people of this country who have been living in malaise and don't have jobs, how do I make them feel better about themselves and better about this country that they live in? How do I do that? And that's what he did. And I think that's what we're all kind of looking for, that person. And it can't be Ronald Reagan because he's already done that. Now it's somebody else's turn.
Yeah. Well, could you ever imagine Ronald Reagan using the slogan, Make America Great Again?
Yeah. All right. Put it on a hat. Yeah. Right. Making America. But he did. He made America great again. He actually did it.
Yeah.
And told us how he was going to do it. But he did it. He did it by using a word that is not in the vocabulary of Donald Trump. He used the word we.
Michael Reagan, thank you for coming on the show to talk about your dad and the future of the party. Do you have a website where listeners can follow you?
Well, you can follow what I do with my Reagan Legacy Foundation. We're doing things all over the world in the name of my father in Berlin and Normandy and what have you. We're very involved with the scholarship program with the men and women who serve on the USS Ronald Reagan. It should be homeported as first part of October in Japan for the next 5 to 10 years to kind of look at North Korea and China at that point. They wanted the Reagan to be the forward of the spear, if you will. So ReaganLegacyFoundation.org, and my Twitter account is at ReaganWorld, and you can find my columns. I write columns every week, and they're at Politico, like you saw the one there, but also you can find them at Newsmax.com.
Definitely do that and check that out, folks. And if you've never been to the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library in Simi Valley, California, you've got to go. It is by far the best of all the presidential libraries. It's a stunning setting, and it's just so worth a visit. Well, Michael, thank you for coming on to talk to me about your father's legacy, and hopefully maybe this time around we'll get a Republican candidate who is worthy of that legacy.
Build his own legacy, not one like Obama.
Well, thank you very much for coming on the show, Michael.
You take care. Hey, thank you so much.
Well, folks, the reason I wanted to have Michael on the show today is because he's probably the only person who can actually say, let's stop looking for the next Ronald Reagan without being branded a heretic. Now, I'm not out on a mission to knock Ronald Reagan. Far from it. I think he's a great president, a fantastic president even. But to practically deify the man and turn the Republican Party into a personality cult goes completely against the conservative spirit of individuality. Not only that, but it ignores the long history of conservative accomplishments before and after Reagan, and it implies that without Ronald Reagan, we wouldn't have much to stand on. Let's not forget that the Republican Party is also the party of Abraham Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt, Eisenhower, Ulysses S. Grant, and one of the most underappreciated presidents in history, Calvin Coolidge. And like Reagan, they were true American originals. They weren't trying to fill another man's shoes. They weren't longing to bring back some perceived golden age. They had confidence in themselves as leaders and in their visions of a pathway forward for America. It's time for conservatives to stop pining for the Reagan era.
and looking for another version of the Gipper, as if they were searching for the next incarnation of the Dalai Lama. Ronald Reagan was the perfect president for his time. But the Republican Party needs a conservative for our time, right now, in the 21st century. And you know who'd agree with me? Ronald Wilson Reagan. I hope you enjoyed the podcast, and thanks again to my guest Michael Reagan for coming on today's show. Be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes and leave us a review. And don't forget to go on our website or click on the survey link in the show notes to take that listener questionnaire for me. I really want to get a feel for who our audience is, and if you just take a minute to fill that out, that'll be a huge help to me. If you like what I'm doing here, then I hope you'll support Kick-Ass Politics by making a donation on the website or go to GoFundMe.com/KickAssPolitics. Because starting last week, we're now ramping up to 2 podcasts a week, but that also means it's costing twice as much, most of which comes out of my pocket, to be honest, and I'm happy to do the show because I enjoy this, but if you want to pitch in, that's always greatly appreciated and really shows me that you value the effort that I put into this every week. So if you want to help out, you can donate on the website or go to GoFundMe.com/KickAssPolitics. And as always, I welcome your comments, questions, gripes, and suggestions at comments@KickAssPolitics.com. But for now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass Politics. This podcast may not be reproduced without express written permission. Kick-Ass Politics is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.